Thank you. Yeah, I'm recording. us in the presence of volunteers, that we have called off the parking lot. I think it's from this morning, we can really show that the past over the time, the past is being. I think the process that the committee has gone through, we looked at all the possible issues with them, and we've done taking the evidence to that thing. And I think in the last week we indicated that we cannot finalise the alias until the recommendations have now indicated that we agree with the policy decision and we lost the government school. So if those are part of it that we are expecting from the committee this morning, that we can then finally have a final document. But the alias is really in principle, subject to parking lot issues being included.
My impression is that there were very few issues that were up. And that when we start with the group that was, and then when we get to an issue that was actually unpicked, and then agree on that and move forward. But I think that is going to take even unnecessary length of time when we say we give you the practice and then go back to the motion. I think let us start by making progress. Let this is a issue, then we go into it and that's my suggestion. As we will be able to say today, we have done good so many classes and we completed them. Are there any comments from the members?
Yeah, sorry. I would have thought what we need to do is to clean up the administrative system. So that when we come to vote, we know exactly what we're voting for. Otherwise, you know, to go in and out of house issues, your question, to me, it would be a little untidy. I think what we need to do, let's deal with this part of the way. And then have a document which says, this is the bill, this is the thing we're voting on. And it's clean, and there's nothing else left. So that there can be no confusion later on, somebody say, we voted on the wrong thing. That would be good.
I don't think this is going to change the price of milk. If it's okay with everybody, we can go the unpicking and then put the best way. I don't think it's going to change the price of milk. Of salary, we have to see with this is today. I can put my suggestion aside and then we'll go with it. Are you ready?
My understanding is that the purpose of the issue was to look at the problem and say, in terms of this one, and then the bill can always come back to us.
as a neutral. So instead of getting into what is referred to as the park issues, which I think I reflected here, the pink section is where the policy decision is required. The legal issues and all of that. So maybe if we oppose the white, the black and white section, we're all agree. No. Okay. So yeah, but still, if we go through the print document, draw the document, and cross reference to the A and the bill, then immediately after that process, then we can get the document, how the government bill is going to look like. If you want to vote to have that, that's the fine.
Let's go page by page, and then we'll look at page 1. What are the outstanding issues? If we then we'll go to page 2, outstanding issues. And if the issues that we need to vote on this page, as we can do it, if not, that is to make further discussion, we can actually go on the speed and make a recommendation for you. Almost together, you know. And if I send out somebody that can do care of the No.
I was going to make a proposal that we probably label the document A, B, and C. And it would probably be easier for us to refer to the fair.
Unnecessarily circumstances.
bring them it is in order, the manner the proposal is in relation to the matter of the permission.
That was
in the bill, in the drafted bill by the department when it was presented to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first point. I think the issue traversing here is that there are trade unions who, in terms of their constitution, they have a clause that says if then that trade union decides to embark on a strike action, it will ballot its members. It depends in the constitution of that trade union because it's not government or parliament that want to go to strike. If the parties that are engaged on matters of mutual interest, so then if that party then, because the law says before you embark on a protection strategy, there are procedures that you need to follow, that you must have a certificate for the CMA, you must notify the other party within 48 hours of your intention to embark on a protected strike. I think that is enough in terms of what needs to reflect in the law. Because if one takes the point that was raised by Honorable Manamela earlier, that before this new Labour Relations Act, there was a clause on balloting. What it has to take trade union was to build their organization. Now, we're not building organizations now. We are extending. So, therefore, the issue of balloting affects with those who want to embark on a strike. I want to make sure that that strike must be protected. Because balloting or not balloting, once the same thing has issued a certificate of a matter that has not been resolved, then it is either party a right to strike. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Look, I was going to go to the shorter version of input. That this clause is as a result of the cutting energy, which is postponing this particular show. That's why I'm not going to get in the debate about whether they should be a ballot or no ballot. Because if the people agree, who are affected, if they agree, why do I think that there is something wrong with their thinking? The only thing which I have problems with in terms of this one was that it, when you say that the majority of the members of the training and employers organization who voted in that election, it means that others, you have to those who did not participate in the vote and who are members of that particular union. And to me, majority means the members of that union, the majority of them, they decide to vote, it means the majority of the members of the union. But I think that's a short argument. I don't think that we should interfere with the law.
That's what is in here in the amendment bill has been agreed to amend it. It's not automatic. Otherwise, if it has been, then we might as well hand it over to the Speaker and introduction to the House and give it our blessing. You know, but I think the fact that it may or may not have been agreed to amendment does not take away our rights as legislators to look at it and we do not think that there is any need. But I think with regards to the point that the Chair has raised, there are already agreements between unions, specific unions and the employer, which allows for the following. And I think if any parties wish to include as part of the, recognition agreement, if they wish to include the whole issue of balloting, or if the union's constitution requires that before going on a strike there should be balloting, then let it be. But we really do not think that there is any requirement
or that more rather than saying there is any necessity for this clause into the act.
Yeah, thank you.
I think we shouldn't lose sight of what this clause said in the amendment. The fact is, what's in there, we were taken up. And during the higher level, during the period when balloting was not a requirement of the law, we have seen the mushrooming of any number of workers. So in an attempt to try and bring some order, this was there. And I believe that there is also another fundamental reason why it is here and why we support it. As Democrats, we've got to make sure that we live though by those principles. And where a majority decision has been taken through the ballot, it duly constitutes the balloting process, then the principle of a democratic process will prevail. Otherwise, we end up with all the kinds of things that we currently see. So it is, from our perspective, it is very consequential whether the law says there will be balloting or whether it says there will not be. So from our perspective, it's critical that this principle is retained.
Thank you, Chair. I think what we need to do is we need to ask Brian Medlac to put this back on the table, and I don't know whether we have any documentation with regard to their motivation to put this back onto the table. It might be as for the reason stated by Honourable Mutab, but I would just like to know exactly why Medlac brought this back into the committee. Thank you very much.
Honourable Gemma, and then I'll give over to Mr. Honourable for some time. He's a gentleman.
Thank you, sir.
Now I'm clear at the watching point, the arguments of brothers. I mean, honorable brothers. Is the issue of unprotected rights. But I think if you look at the Act has a way of dealing with unprotected rights. Now, what we're talking about here is a right that is protected, the work process that has been followed. There were discussions between two parties, and the issue that will make workers to go to a strike is not an issue of rights, it's a matter of insight. So that comes as a result of bargaining process, where parties reach deadlock. And then after reaching deadlock, then CCMA becomes involved to mediate on the issue that the two parties could not agree on. If it can be resolved through mediation, that's when then our certificate will be issued. So the issues that Honorable Mundaro raised is two different issues. This is an issue in relation to matters that the process are at the level of this is the MA. And the issue, as Honorable Williams has indicated, the right to study there in the Constitution. And the Labour Lessons and Section 54 deals with that. What is it that needs to be followed in order to advance to a protected site? And also, what is an unprotected site? Section 54, current Section 54, deals with those issues. So obviously, there's no need of a ballot to reflect in the level of the
So you're saying that if this balloting is going to lose lots of violence, because when people feel that they are not going to have that number that they want, they can just go out on their own and do that thing and be protecting them. And while hate crime goes together with wild cat lockup. And I haven't had any American meeting where they're going to fall out, what is going to be a lot of work. And always call the police, the security told the gate, everybody go home. Let's look at what happened at net level this week. This is actually by members here. Yeah.
Just to clarify, Honourable Member, that this provision was put in the bill when it was published at the department. It was debated network. It was supported by Labour, by business, but it was protected by Labour. Therefore, there was no network agreement on this clause. That's the only thing that I wanted to clarify.
You
can
put it
at Labour rejected it, business supported it. And as you know how NEDEC operates, if there's no consensus on the issue, it's reflected as an issue that there's no agreement on. Therefore, it's not correct to say it was put to the place. So, no agreement that NEDEC could be.
Honorable
Director,
feel that they would rather have the principle of no pain because they want to take a stance, they believe that they've got a strong foot to stand on, and they feel they've been treated unfairly by the employer, then they can bring out that vote, they can show to the employer, sorry, we will rather go out on strike than tolerate what you are doing to us. And that is what plays at the bottom of this. Will we allow the people who are affected by the strike, people who are not taking money home or a normal amount of money on the end of the line, do we allow them to express themselves, or do we leave it to the union bosses, many of whom will not be affected financially by the strike at all, to decide whether there is going to be a strike or not? And for me, then it's clear. And that's why I welcome the reintroduction of this clause. As far as Honorable Yakema's amendment to this clause is concerned, I support what he wants to achieve, because again, we know that that sometimes, you know, a ballot may not be well advertised, only a group of people turn up, there's a lot of intimidation, we say all those in favor of the strike, put up your hands, emotion up high, etc. And also we know that many unions have quite inflated membership numbers. And therefore, if you want a majority, 50% plus one of the membership to vote in favor of a strike, that in sense would also be more democratic. On the other hand, I think that is what ISMAC is also recognizing. That's why they included only the number of people who have participated in the ballot. This is very difficult to audit membership numbers. Then you start fighting about, you know, is it 50% of the full membership or not? Whereas if only the votes that have been brought out in a ballot, then it's much easier to audit them to say, well, 100 people voted, 60 were in favor, 40 were against, so the strike wasn't. So although I understand the sentiment, I think the wording that we have here is the best that we can come up with.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with the previous honourable speakers. A union is an association of workers, and it's about the workers and not about management. I actually can also refer perhaps to pension funds. Pension funds are the pensioners and not the trustees. Sometimes people forget this. And therefore, when something significant must take place, like a strike, which has various implications, legal and so forth, financial, then I think the workers must have a say in that. So it goes back to the principle of democracy, but it also goes back to the principle of good corporate governance. So as to make sure that you actually have a mandate to embark on a significant event like a strike from a democratic perspective. So I think this, the questions that we must answer, perhaps Honourable Manamela must indicate what are the fears and what are the unintended consequences that can flow from having this right entrenched in law, and let's try to address those things specifically, but not take away the right as such to vote. Thank you very much.
I think that we should understand that this law is fundamentally a restriction. It's not a right. It's fundamentally restricting workers. But in the past, under apartheid, this law was in play. You couldn't go on strike unless you had a ballot. So fundamentally, it was used. Now, we must understand how it was used. It was used by the employer to say your strike is illegal because you didn't meet A, B, and C, and you didn't have this ballot, and there were 100 members, and only 5 of you went to the balloting. And it was actually used to prevent workers from going on strike. And it will be used again by the employer in South Africa to prevent workers from going on strike. And fundamentally, it's taking away the workers' rights. And we can put in a clause that is fundamentally, basically bringing back apartheid to the workers in South Africa. And we need to remove this clause.
There is no fact. All that you are saying is that there's actually no necessity for this condition to be in the act. And the reason why we say there's no necessity is primarily because whether there is balloting or not, whether the majority agrees that it should be enforced or it should be enforced, the right to strike was to today. Because if you make issues of sophisticated, let there be strike, there will be a strike. Whether it will be a minority of workers who go on a strike or the majority of workers who go on a strike, it's so. This process is inconsequential, and that's our argument. So you go to the CMA because of the deadlock for the employer, the CMA issues you with the certificate, immediately you have a protected class. So you can go to a ballot and say, how many of our workers want to go on strike, how many of our workers don't want to go, or never, don't want to go on a strike. Whether 50 out of 100, I mean 51 out of 100 say, we're not going to go on a strike, the 49 still have the right to go on strike. Now, so that's the first point. The second point is that you at ease now, it is only workers who can break any strike. If Fatal says, the Fatal executive says we're going to go on a strike, and only a handful of workers go out on a strike, it will be immaterial for those workers to continue with that strike. Now, if you've been on a shop steward or you're an organizer, you would know that you don't take the decision to go on a strike lightly, and you don't present that decision to the executive. You present that decision in a general meeting of all the affected workers, and on the basis of a general or majority of the sentiment, that's when you decide to go, on a strike. So our point is that as long as this provision will not have what? Will not include
situation where the majority of workers say that there should be a strike, then there's no strike. Then it has no consequence. But once you put in law that a majority of union members in a workplace can decide that the rest don't go on a strike, then that's unconstitutional. That's illegal. And that's why we say that this this clause has got absolutely no consequence. Of course, that's not take away that function of the trade unions to go out and mobilize their workers to vote for or against, to participate or not to participate in a strike. In fact, with or without even without a valid decision, any worker who does not want to participate in a strike goes ahead and goes to work. And let's forget about the fact that there have been instances where workers who go to work during a strike have been targeted because that's been dealt with elsewhere. That's a criminal thing, that's been dealt with elsewhere. But I think the essence of our argument is that this provision has no consequence, it is not necessary, and therefore we do not need to have it in law. But which is not necessarily a legal problem. What we could encourage is a situation where in joint negotiations on the cooperation agreement, both the union and the employer can have a provision that says blend up biology in those two cooperation agreements. But other than that, if you want to insist on this clause being put into the legislation, when it has no consequence whatsoever, it is as good as I don't think that we should make a provision that is difficult.
Democracy in this country across all states. We cannot do that
then we are betraying our constitution. I believe it is very, very important to bear that in mind. And if my colleagues are arguing that it is neither here nor there to have bargaining, why are we having this discussion?
The
thank you, Honourable
the issue of legitimizing a strike is fundamental. Because the fact that the strike is legal does not mean that it has been supported by those people who are on strike. That's the reason why. When teachers went on strike, other teachers went to schools to keep others out of school in Colorado Park. Those teachers wanted to teach because the issue of the legitimacy of the strike was at the core. Whether these people agreed, I think that those, is right. If people, if they are 30%, if they vote not to go on strike, they must be allowed to go on strike. But the 30% should not force the 80% to go on strike based on the fact that the strike is legal. That's why it's important. The ballots will just determine the legitimacy of the strike. Because the people must remember, the people vote as individuals, not as a group. And I hope that the ballot will be a secret ballot. And there's no way, when you put this law, we give the employer the right to say, interdict the strike on the basis that it was a ballot was not done properly. It does not say that only after the ballot will the strike be legal or legitimate. But the outcome, I mean, if more than, if the majority of workers vote not go on strike, those who want to go on strike will still go on strike. It does not stop them from doing that. But then we will then test how democratic is that particular organization. We can question about how democratic are you. Whether you are a minority or a majority, you still do what you believe and see that. It will definitely test how democratic those organizations are.
This is saying in where I come from. There is Fischer's Baumwai. So the true field is nosy. Kind of. If you are working in an institution, and you are, a few of you are the lowest in terms of ranking that the institution, and you feel that you are exploited, even while that group is, and your working conditions are not up to standard, it's actually more dangerous to go forward than to pay a call. Because if you need the money, that even the money that you earn can only help you to come back to work the following day. And you can't even afford food for that matter. There are some people who, I mean, we've always talked about the poverty of the employer. And if they need a little toy, I'm at the receiving end. I've got nothing to lose, you know. Come what may, I mean, I can't be giving you from my salary. I want one price. And I just take everybody. Now I'm breaking tomorrow, I'm going to get a big game. This is unfair. Of course, there will be people by security. I know the security will take me. I'll get people now. And the chances of being fired are here. I mean, and fired or not fired, it doesn't mean anything for me because it's not going to change my life at all. That's why you found during the crisis that there were people who fought in the depression crisis were not the military. There was no bounty. If those who felt it, those who felt it knew what it felt like, and they decided it doesn't matter, you know. Whether I fight or I don't fight, I'm going to die next week because these guys were killing everybody in the village. They'll come and raid the village to beat up people. And those who had nothing to lose, actually, were the ones who took up arms and fought against the government. Of course, later the ranks swelled. But now today, everybody claims that no one claims about this. But I'm telling you, it doesn't matter whether you want it or not. And it's not about
the consequences of going on strike. If you enter the city and you go on strike, whether it doesn't matter. I think I'll agree that let us probably follow things, but not taking a thing. Because if I want to strike because I'm worse off than all, I mean in terms of payment, I will go on strike.
Can I express my disagreement with you? I don't agree that we should profit, but in the sense that the majority should be efficient, but I want to push my doctor that I don't agree that we should profit.
Honorable Albert.
Chair, if I may ask the legal advisor, just give us an opinion. As Honorable Mamamela has indicated that, from his point of view, this is inconsequential clause, what the effect and the clause would be on the right to strike from their point of view, whether a valid is held or not, as it stands at the moment.
I wish we could get a legal opinion from some bullies and lawyers.
Также огромный лояльность к этим тенькин за славен и службой Путасайс и с адвокатом Дизма и Путасайс и с Алкорном, как это все же, но это лояльность. Мазин Курти лояльность к этим I think that the what made me to raise my hand is us to be careful of crafting legislation where we give rights to workers of belonging to a trade union, and that trade union must have its own constitution, set up its own administration. Once it has done that, and then it must approach government, in particular this capital labor, to register as registered trade. Now, it is only going to be accepted in terms of its own constitution. Now, I don't understand this democracy that my colleagues are talking about, because every decision that is going to be taken by any organization is taken in terms of the constitution of that particular organization. If then any constitution is not democratic, I don't know what is it that we are talking about. Because here we are not trade unions, but members of parliament. And the example that Honorable Khanal raised about SADC, I think he was referring to the SADC side, South African Democratic Union side. A trade union that has always where it goes to any protected side, it comes from a bargaining council in the public service. It borrows its members. It borrows its members in terms of its own constitution. So if then there will be those things that happen, they happen even if there was a power. So the issue here is the issue of power cannot be associated with principles of democracy. Because any organization has followed what the constitution says in terms of embarking or taking decisions. So that's the point I wanted to advance purpose in that. Because a participant in even the terms of the constitution of the public says that the right to start. And then there must be legislation of that saying how that strike will take place. And then the Labour Legislative Act, Section 64 of the LRA, say how that strike must take place is emphasizing and putting in it to what the Constitution says. Thank you, Russia.
I just can explain the effect of this. I mean, our legislation does not give the state away the right to thrive. The right to thrive is the constitutional right. But effect of this legislation, it will take away the protection. The LRA gives protection. If you follow procedure, you are protected. If you don't follow procedure, you are not protected. So therefore, you can face the future if you go to a threat that doesn't follow the procedure. The effect of this is that this proposal introduced another loop. Presently, what you need to do, you need to defend this dispute, go to CCMA for conciliation. CCMA gives you a case. Then you give 48 hours notice and the strike is protected. Now, this proposal says, after going to CCMA, you've got to parole. Then after you parole, you give the notice, 48 hours notice, so the parole, you've got your majority of the people that are voted. Then your strike is protected. But you can go to strike, you take the risk of a dismissal if you don't follow that, as the present law is. That's the consequence of the proposal that we're going to do.
I just wanted to make a very important point that like every organization that I know of in this country has its own constitution. All of them have to abide by the laws of the country. Take any company, take Anglo, take DS, take Starting, take Starting, all of them. It is very important not to forget this. What we are trying to do is to give a framework under which these things will happen. And ours is to make sure that the principles that we have voted for at Cordesa are adhered to. We are lucky, we have hindsight. We have had an experience with balloting and we have had an experience without balloting. And now, because of that, we have come up to this thing where we say, maybe we should go back to the thing. This is just a point I want to make, because it's very important to learn from our own history. If we don't do that, we make the same mistake.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't think that Cadeza had any intention of taking away the protection of workers' strike. So I don't think we should use Cadeza here. Fundamentally, after Cadeza, this law was removed from the labour law. So I think completely out of line. Fundamentally, what we need to do is we need to look at what are we protecting here, and it seems that if we put this clause 6 into the bill, if we reintroduce this ballot system into our labour relations law, we are fundamentally, like was said by the department, putting in another step before workers can go on strike, on a protected strike. So they have the right to strike. They have the right to go on strike unprotected. So fundamentally, we're taking away their right to strike if we put this in here. I'm sure that if we do put this in, it will be challenged in the Constitution because it's taking away their constitutional right. You cannot say, you've got the right to walk down the street, but we can't protect you from being hit by a car, but you can walk down that street. You know, we can't do that. So fundamentally, if we put this clause in, it will be undermining the Constitution, which says after a procedure, if a dispute is reached and there's a deadlock, you go through a procedure and then the union will go on strike. And now we're trying to put in another step in that process, which fundamentally takes away the workers' right to a protected strike, and it's unconstitutional, and we will be challenged on this, I'm sure, if it goes through.
It is not about taking anybody's right. It's to say that the workers on the top floor have the right to be heard when a strike is called. That's the issue. I think it is that if people, if the negotiators declare a dispute, go to conciliation, and they decide to say, we are reaching an agreement on this issue, let's go on trial. What we are suggesting is that there will be a process where the feelings of workers themselves must be tested. That's really the issue. It has nothing to do with taking away the right to trial. But if those workers, if 80% of them at that particular place, irrespective of how bad things are or how good things are. If 80% of them say we want to go on strike, that strike in the eyes of everybody is legitimate. But if 80% of those people say we don't want to go on strike, irrespective of how organized the government is to eliminate everybody not to get into the petrol, that strike will be legitimate in the eyes of everybody. And that is how democratic those involved is. And I don't understand why we have fear of allowing the worker from the shop floor to make a decision about whether you want to go on strike or not. Why don't we give them that right to make that decision? Why do we fear the right of the worker to make a decision of whether they want to go on strike or not? That, to me, that's fundamental.
Perhaps an answer lies with the unions themselves. Just a thought that if the unions constitution states that it must be more democratic in the sense that a decision like this must be placed for a poll, then the law must support that. If a union constitution says, well, we provide a mandate to our leaders to make that decision, then that should be the case. Maybe the power should lie with the union, but the law should sanction that and support those unions that actually do allow for democracy. Perhaps that's a midway to be in the
okay. No.
Another has spoken before me, and I took the word. And we don't look at my example. How can you say you are asking me?
Maybe you know what I mean.
How can I like it for that reason? Gentlemen, I think we have advanced divine arguments on this matter. And I think Bamboa is suggesting that the point is that one gets this. That to have a right, legislate the right, and then at the same time there's a condition for that right to be applied. It's a problem. Because the reality of the situation is that if I raise the argument that my colleagues are raising, is that it is fine to have a procedure in terms of the legislation, the principal application, for you to engage in a protected strike. All of that. And I think the same legislation is not just to say follow that without exhausting your organizational requirements. Because there's no negotiator or a governor that can simply get out of the negotiation without confronting the structured members of that trade union and say, this is how far we've gone in this negotiation. And obviously then now you will be given a mandate. That's why there's something called mandate. You are given a mandate now to declare this. And you get that certificate and then you come back and say, after the conciliation, the dispute has not been resolved. And then members say, we go to a strike. And then you give a notice now on top of the certificate. You give a notice in writing to the employer that union so and so is going to embark on a strike action. It gives a notice. Now, to say that after we have got the certificate so then you don't have to issue a notice without quality. In that way you are nullifying the process that you engage in, which is in terms of the exercise of you to have a certificate, that's not the exercise. I think Honorable Albert is basically correctly said to say that the legislation must support Even your constitution says, as a trade union now, before you have voluntary protection, you have to honor that your constitution that says, as an organization. I made an example about the South African Democratic Association. So the principal act currently doesn't say, so you don't have to follow that because you don't have that obsession with insecticides that say that. It supports it. It supports the current. But the issue here is that we mustn't now force the constitution as the way other trade unions operate by putting this clause in the legislation. Because in that way, we are not different from a parliament that says, don't say you want to be a trade union, so therefore we'll tell you what is exactly to reflect in your constitution. How are you supposed to operate? How are you supposed to engage in when there are disputes of interest? So this argument, this is big advance in relation to the following. To me, it's everything. Nothing else for that. But let me, can I request a caucus just for 5 minutes? Please.
I want to follow.
Thank you.
this way, that we, is it possible to reflect on that possible that?
No need for the to cricket.
substantive in terms of the current act, the Virtual Ballot Act, is being amended. And what informs that amendment? The current Virtual Ballot Act does stay to figures. And further discussion is followed.
If you look on the current decision now, it's 2002. Give protection for workers against being sued this time for involving in a specific crime. 67.2 of the president, it reads, a person does not commit or commit a breach of contract by taking part in a protected strike and drain ANC there. Now, this proposal says, except if that person breaches, there's a material breach, that was being reduced now, that exception, a material breach of secrecy rule agreement established in 1769. This is saying that if you enter into secrecy rule and you breach those secrecy rule, then the other party can take it to court for breaching the secrecy rule. That's what we're trying to do. And if you look at 6 also, 7-6, 7-6 talks to civil litigation. That civil legal process may not be incident against any person for participating in a strike. It's a tax worker that he cannot be sued for participating in a strike. And then this amendment says, except if that protection for the way it is around the breach of the material breach of the ticket rule. That's where it is required, and if the chairperson is correct, that this provision is a provision that deals with the issue of the ability of the wearer, whether can they be sued or not. That's what the FBs talk to. Is it clear?
Thank you.
Can I also help to explain what NAC is for the current members on the Central Institute? NAC relates to a round ticketing rule again, where the bill is proposing that to deal with the problem, remember the Constitution guarantees the right to strike, and the law takes that further. Presently, there's been a complaint that for workers working organized by SACAW specifically and other trade unions in the retail sector, it's difficult for them to exercise the right to strike and picket, basically picket, because if they want to picket in the mall and they've got a dispute with Shoprite, but they don't have a dispute with picketing, there's also picketing in this. And if they picket there, they might picket 100 meters away from Shoga, but that 100 meters will be 20 meters towards Picket Bay. And Picket Bay will say, look, you are affecting my ability to business. You can't be picketing there. Now, this proposal is saying that when, remember the rule to picket normally also heals that extent. Where can you picket and what the conduct in picket? What this does, it says that even third party, that means now people who are not involved in the strike, pick and pay now, although the strike is short back, pick and pay can go to the CCMA as an interested party, and CCMA in fact, they should invite us to come in third party to make an instance in the room government ticketing. And if they make that input, they must up their interest in the rules, but if they fail not to come and make that input and the rules are failed, those rules will affect them also. They can't say, well, no, I'm not part of those rules, they will agree between you and Checker. Those rules have got the ability of affecting them. If the rule says the union must be 100 meters from Shoprite and they fail to go to the discussion in the rules to see that if they get 100 meters from Shoprite, it means 20 meters on them. Therefore, for them, it's not good enough. It is good enough for Shoprite. and he was given an opportunity to go and make that point and add that point in the meeting that he existed at the role. And they failed to do that, then those rules will also affect them. This is what this clause is trying to do.
The important thing is that those set parties have got to be involved in the decision making process.
That is the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
Clause 10. No change is proposed, resolution changes to control. I'm
24. The main issue there is the time periods. What I suppose we are still attempting from our life. What I suppose that
the last discussion we dealt with this issue. The only issue that was hanging is starting to 44, which talks to the 6 months. The principle of what was proposed and the terminology of 42 and 43, there was really no problem. There were, I think, structural arrangements that were put in. But the real issue is the X, the member as well, in terms of this. And this is the question that deals with labor broking, basically. Whether should you allow labor broking for the first 6 months, for the first 0 months, for the first X months. And that's what in the last session when we debated the issue, that was the issue, including then the transitional arrangement, the changes that were presented. In the last meeting.
Because the proposal is now
even run. So it basically means that 1A, capital A, 1A, capital A, that is your proposal, that temporary service does not include any period of work due to time. That would then have a, if that is the decision by the committee, that would then have a consequence for them that we have to go and clean up. To try to form 44 to connect all the discussions we on our minds and to see these things. Considering that it's in service no longer in the present.
That's what you're saying.
zero. Yesterday, for example, not a PGC. So what we are saying, zero from the beginning. The temporary government services will just create a pattern, and that pattern will have to be employed by that particular employer where they are paid. So there will be no temporary employment services. That's what we are
saying. So you say, that interpretation is correct.
What you would be saying is that nobody can engage in that kind of activity as a work provider. And the Constitution will not agree. Our Constitution is very, very clear that all of us have a right to start in any activity as long as we are living. So we cannot, by subterfuge, try and labor approach you. Very, very clear.
Our country, one of our country's biggest challenges at this point in time, if not the biggest, is the high levels of unemployment. And labor grabbing, if you want to use that term, has proven to fulfill gaps in the labor market. Unfortunately, it has been abused by some employers. And that is one thing I want to say that within the realm of the law, why we want to make not an escape route for employers who actually need permanent employees to do the work, but that do not want to, you know, by all the regulations and want very hard to administer employment contracts with all the employment conditions, disciplinary processes, etc. If we are going to go to the group that is proposed here today, I think we have already had an impact assessment that shows us that we will be losing massive amounts of jobs in the economy. And that is where the constitutional right of people to work comes in. And for me, the important thing is, do we want to enhance unemployment in this country at this point in time? Yes or no? Because it's been proven. I mean, there's an academic study that shows that that is going to happen. And this is what the gentleman is being proposed here today. That South African people will find it hard to find employment. And if I, for example, want to come to South Africa, I'm an American company, I want to shoot a film here in this country, I want to make use of other employers to render services to me. Now I need to first register for my own UIF, my own compensation fund, and all this list that I need to go through. So I'd rather choose another country where I can hire the services without having to hire the employees. And that is damaging. And I want to say to you, Chair, this is famous fire. And this is going violent while fire is out there. And I seriously want to ask you to please put our country's interests, to please put the interests of the unemployed today and the future unemployed, because existing jobs are going to exist. We have more unemployed people in this country than in 1994 when we were at the height of sanctions and all those things which stubborn our economy. It is absurd, sir. And I really plead to the members to be more responsible in this regard and to put national interests before party interests. Thank you.
Thank you.
My view is that, look, if there is somebody who can appoint somebody on temporary basis, that particular time which I'm heading with people. If that particular mechanism is in the same position after 6 months, it means that particular position exists. And therefore that particular person must be taken through that. But if I say zero, I will never know whether the position exists. What I'll be more worried is to say, how do we deal with people who are abusing, like when you on the fifth month, they remove the person. And then after, they put another person in the same position. I'll be more worried about how do I deal with people like that. But I will not want to stop people who can be able to place people on temporary basis, because temporary, you can't place everybody permanently, because people need jobs. And sometimes it's just employed for 3 days or 4 days. But the person who's looking for a person for 5 days, 6 days, they've not time to move around looking for people for 5 days. But there might be somebody who has to be providing that particular service. If I need people for 3 days, I can call that person, can give me the people for 3 days. My attitude is that we have got to be able to say, you can get people for 3 days, 5 days, 6 days. But once a person is in the same position, more than 6 months, it becomes a permanent position, and that's what the person should be appointed. And that's where I move from.
What will be the rank of workers who are in that? They are asking to work on medical aid, quite a few years. When we get that people will need to do that work? What is the situation? Honorable Mutab.
I want to align myself with my comrades. I'm actually very tempted to put away my DA hat and wear my South African hat.
This
is a very, very serious matter, gentlemen. This is not a plaything. This is about our people out there. This is about trying to make every effort for every one of us to be employed. We cannot at this time take out of the equation anything that we can do to put anybody in a job. And so when we talk about these 0 times and 3 months and efficiency like that, we're actually gambling with the life and languages of our people. It is very, very serious, and this is a personal appeal from me to you. Let's act responsibly. Let's think about what is happening. We have over 7 million South Africans without jobs. Let's not deny one of them an opportunity to get into a job through the so-called labor program. Let's be rational, let's be responsible, let's make sure that those people out there who brought us here can depend on us next time around.
Thank you. Honorable William, Honorable William.
Thank you. I think that nobody here takes this lightly. Fundamentally, if we look at Section 198A, subsection A, who this covers, these temporary services cover people who fall below the threshold. So fundamentally, they're the lower income end of our working population. So their skills are relatively low compared to higher people, people on higher salaries. And majority of those people are the unskilled, basically, you know, the lowest paid people in South Africa. And I think these are the most vulnerable and the most exploited section of our working population. If we put a period in here of 6 months, fundamentally what happens for 6 months is that these exploited workers who are already low paid and vulnerable workers, their employers have the opportunity to pay them different wages for people doing the same work, and their employer for that 6 months is a labor broker. And this is why the government, well, the department has decided to attempt to regulate. Now, we cannot regulate exploitation of workers. It is inhumane. Fundamentally, the position of a 0 month period, just because there's an argument from the opposition saying that jobs will be lost, does that mean that if we exploit people as long as they're working, then that's okay? So in other words, bring back slavery, because hey, under apartheid, more people were employed. They had no rights at all, but because of the fact
that nobody's talking about bringing back slavery.
Hey, we're not.
Fundamentally, Chairperson.
No. You can't say we have to bring back slavery. That's rubbish. I'm a nice guy, but I'm not going to take crap.
No,
The same is you, I'm fine.
No, you're
this from me, but you can
have. Absolutely.
No, it's not talking to you.
He's talking to me. He's saying we should bring that flavor. We say.
No.
I'm not going to sit here and listen to that kind of thing.
I am very emotional
about this thing. This is about people who don't have jobs. We are worried about people who have jobs.
That needs to be done. has the issue that we are having is there must be no employee at the end of the day who will be subjected to disappearance of the employer. That's the issue. Now, I think Honorable Kanare and Honorable Father Vesten, I think, made critical examples. They made examples, the other one is coming from another country, wants to do work here. There's a number of things that must be done. He will need people who will assist that operation that I agree. The issue that I'm talking about is how to get those people. That's the issue. It's not to say you mustn't get. You must get. The question is, how do you get that? If you cannot, on the basis of this gentleman, I think it's important to explain this gentleman to be understood that you will arrive from another country, Mr. Wotenzen, if I might use your example, Father Bertie. There is a labor broker. Because you are new in this country, you don't know where to source labor. But as a labor broker, you approach that labor broker saying you want four people who have this quality. Good. The gentleman doesn't say you can't do that. But what the labor broker will do, because it does have those qualities that you are looking for in its database. It's people who are looking for employment. But they are in your database. It will provide you with the number of people that you want. It's you who want those people. It's not the labor broker. It's you. Then it provides you with the people that you want, with the skills that you want. You charge a service fee for placing the place in all these people that were required by that company, then there is no employment relationship because you have not employed anyone. The only person that you employ as a labor broker is the one who is answering telephone when you are not there. That person is employed by you. And we are not suggesting that you must dismiss that person just because the zero man, no, no. That's not how it is. And the zero man doesn't say the labor broker must cease to exist. But how do they operate? That's the issue. And I think that whilst you are still going to deal with other causes, which talk to temporary work, whether you call it temporary work or fixed camp on that. Now, if then now, because this section 198A, B, C, they do talk to each other in a way. Because if you will see when you get there, we'll be talking about a fixed camp contract. Now, there's no middleman. There's no middleman now when we'll be talking about a fixed camp contract. And when we'll be talking about the casual employment, there's no middleman. Now, if that does exist, why this one is becoming different? Why there has to be a number of months in order for you to be employed by this client? Well, the work that I will do in terms of the proposed in section 198B is all temporarily in nature. Because it's not permanent there. It will expire in a particular time. Even my contract of employment will reflect when am I going to be employed here, when my contract will expire. That's the issue. That's where the discussions are. It's not to say labor brokers must not exist. They must exist. But the issue that we're dealing with is their operation. That's the issue. Thank you very much.
I tell you one sentence, I mean from my understanding, that we, this is
This input does not mean that labor workers should be bad.
What it says is that temporary work should continue. Because it is in the nature of work that sometimes we need to do the work.
Very much. Why the rest of the flock? Why only 100% of?
And I think my worry mostly has been that there is when people are to be remunerated, you find that they're very different. Because those who are transferred full-time by the company and those who are coming in at 10,000 workers. These people coming from the same function to ship, working for a bad company for a while. They come from the same function. They do the same work, but when it comes to their salary, those who are employed by labor workers, they have to share their salary with the labor workers. Now, my understanding of this is that we want this labor brokerage to work like placement agents, where it will be a once-off relationship. Another tracking, they want 20 drivers. I give them 20 drivers, another pay my money for having sorted the drivers.
Come from them out.
Why should they always keep these people for 6 months? Part of their salary will come to me. So this is the part I want to understand. What one of the reasons? Are you talking about training this person? Or are you talking about workers getting what is supposed to be due to them in terms of medical aid and blah blah blah, all the other benefits? Honorable Albert, I'm coming this way.
Chair, basically my comment is just a high level comment. We must find a way between the formalization of the economy and keeping a fluid economy going. On the one side, government is imposing a lot of red tape. I can, for instance, give you the example of Mr. Rob Davis's business license in law. That just puts more onerous obligations on business, and now it has gone back for review. But also this committee and the Department of Labour must be very wary as to the red tape and requirements we're going to put on employers. If we put too much onerous obligation on them, it will drive them away. It has been said before, I'm not saying anything new. And I'm believing that we must find some middle way that we know will work. And I always say that whatever we do, it must work, right? We want the economy to work, we want employment to rise, we want good jobs, we don't want jobs where people exploit. We want to be a country known as a country that looks after its people, that its workers, and also the people who do not have jobs, who must enter the market. So, whatever we do, we must find some way of these things to work. And I don't know whether there's any research further out there that will guide us, because we are now falling into a trap of division in our discussions here, us versus them, on both sides, and that is a dangerous position. And I'm sure that there must be some more research out there, and I don't know whether we can to find a way where we can go walk of the middle path, golden middle path, so to speak, so that we do allow for fluidity in the economy, where people can be employed very quickly, but also allow for a safety net that people cannot just be exploited and fired so easily. Thank you, Chair. I just want to add, I need to leave early, if you'll excuse me, unfortunately.
Because Honorable William made a statement that the opposition wants slavery to come back. Which is a discussion of what we said. And I understand why Honorable William was saying. Because if a patent is stopped, what you are saying. By I may see something like that, but maybe you really don't agree with me. It's because one clever is quite there. And this is a public meeting. If people, if we are protested because we disagree with you, and people who are clever to come back, that's absolutely the only thing to say that. Because in Barack said that, that you want clever to come back. But secondly, you must read Marx. All workers get exploited in a capitalist society. You must read Marx better. Because there is no capitalist society where workers don't get exploited. The issue is, at what level do you tolerate that type of exploitation? That's the issue. And as far as we are concerned, because people talk about labor brokers, in many stations there is nowhere where I read about labor brokers in this station. We are talking about temporary service. And if you read the 198A5, it says an employee deemed to be a member of the client in terms of subsection 3B must be cleared on the whole, not that a temporary reason an employee of the client performing the same or similar work, unless there is a justifiable reason for different treatment. That's what the legislation says. That means if this particular temporary employment services place you, but when they place you, you must be treated the same as other employees in that particular job. That's what it says. And it's wrong for the agency to create an impression that other parties want good workers to be treated less than the other workers. It's wrong. And secondly, the issue is what we are saying, but why do you think as a temporary by the temporary employee? To me, it makes us what the honorable member of the School of Science said is a middle road. To me, the department wedding and their proposal is a real middle road. In terms of my time, I think to me, if somebody is placed by temporary employment services and they are employed by temporary employment services, after 6 months, it clearly shows to me that vacancy is there. That job is there. So the employer might employ that particular person. That's where I move from. Secondly, if you are going to employ, I believe that even if a worker is employed for 5 days here, 6 days there, 7 days there, they might have the right to unemployment insurance fund. But how do they get unemployment insurance fund if they are not employed by anybody? And to me, if the temporary employment services can employ this particular person, even if they place them at different places during 2 months, but those particular people have got the right to claim unemployment insurance fund from the temporary employment service, which has employed them. So it's fine to say, no, just place them 5 days and then take them after 5 days and place them somewhere else, but there's no other protection and there's no other benefit except being based all around the place for 6 months, 3 months here, 2 months here, as long as they are seen to be employed by that particular person. And get your
mind, but after 3 months, you must go. Thank you, Chair. The issue about me being my colleague, the American probably all know by that by now, I was everybody is different. I don't know. Or keep physical points in here or in the house. So when my views are distorted and as questions are cast upon me, I think it's very personal. The important thing about this legislation is that there are very practical issues that we are dealing with. Crime is committed every day in this country using knives. But we don't ban knives. We arrest the people who use knives for stabilizers and we prosecute them. Labor brokers, like any other employer, will tap on us. That's why we have a labor inspector. So, once we're trying to solve a problem, we should not take a flat armor to beat up on a car. Let's look at where the problems are. Let's correct those problems. Nobody, least of all a black person like myself, will want to see anybody exploited. So, it is very, very important to understand what we're trying to do here. What we're trying to do here is to give every South African an opportunity to be in a job and earn not only money, but their self-respect.
There are too many people in this country who have lost self-respect, who have nothing because they don't work. And that's my appeal. That's why I plead with you. Let us be rational when we make these moves.
Thank you,
Chairperson. A number of points. The first one is, don't say we're not banning labour brokers since we changed the term this year. There's a place for employment as well. It's very important service. But we're then speaking about placement service. It's not, it can't be employment service. Because people are, if you, your amendment goes through, they cannot employ people anymore. So let's qualify those members who are today trying to ban something. The second thing is to the economy, I wish you could mess with the economy. I would love it, but the economy is not something to be messed around. There are forces at work in the economy that we at best can try to guide and work in some respects. But South Africa is part of a global economy now, and we cannot be out of step anymore. I've got being out of step with the rest of the world stopped in 1994. But it then seems to me that if those in power now is, in that respect, again, convinced that they are right and that the rest of the world is out of step. Chair, projects, temporary employment opportunities is something which is actually a sign and a growing reality of the modern economy. People want workers for shorter. And it's not necessarily the slaves and the exploited and that sort. And look on the issue of slavery, sir. A slave is somebody who, against his or her will, is forced to do something. Nobody forces any person to go put his name on a list of the labor market. It's a choice. It is actually because the other part of the economy is not going fast enough that many people who would not like to be on the list of the labor employment service provider put his or her name on it. But I know highly qualified people who are and were employed through these employment services. People, for example, with computer skills, network skills, you know, they, if you're a company with 30 or 40 people, you have a computer network. Sometimes when you change from one program to another, there's a new computer to be installed, you for a short time meet people with specialized knowledge. And then those people want to know that once I finish my job here, there's a next one waiting for me and I want to move on to that one. I don't want to look around and apply for a post every time, negotiate salary, etc. This is my fee, and they are quite happy then to work for every province. I've mentioned the whole matter of, for example, the film industry, with drama and all those things involved there, where you've got short runs of the need for employment. There are the whole issue of people in the event management business, where you for a short while need people to come and give security services, people to come and help with ushers, showing people the need. Now, yes, I am an entrepreneur. I can go and advertise every time and say for Saturday night when this young American car is going to come and perform in Johannesburg or in Cape Town, I need so many security guards, etc. The fact is, if I make it more difficult for people to get the necessary people, if now I need to interview them, or I need to check their eyes, I need to put them on the UIF, on the safety card, whatever all the administrative rigmarole is. If I have the choice of doing that here, or in another country where there are bigger burdens put on me to do something like that. I may quite easily take my form making to another country and bother doing it. So, and that is the implication of this. We are effectively today making a decision for unemployment versus employment. That is what it comes down to. Now, already in the VR report, we've been warned, and that is why we have allowed enormous job losses. And that is why people have come up and said, here we've got a bill down which will not lead to most job losses. And which will bring back the real nature of what is a temporary employment services service supposed to be all about. Because no doubt, there have been
forms where it was abused. But, Chairperson, this country cannot afford to push on unemployment levels. We're already far, far beyond that level where unemployment is seen as acceptable. To be unemployed in this country is a terrible thing. We don't have the social services, the social network that European and other countries have. And they will only have one choice, and that is to have everybody, as many people as possible, in employment. So I'm really pleading with you, don't play around with words. If you accept this proposal of the 0 days, we will get out there and we will say that you have banned that purpose, because that is effectively what your party then would have done there. And I cannot be pressing enough. We must keep our young and unemployed people hope, and you are giving hope. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we know what was Honorable Hanada raised earlier before he put his voice on the matter that the subject for discussion. But I think after that, Honor Group and the President now, his argument in a way is one that is correct. He is achieving the ANC because the ANC is not in the ruling party. Because in his argument, he makes a difference if you are ruling now. I think he's in a way is deviating from the issue that we're talking about. The issue that we're talking about here is Section 198A. It's not about who is ruling. Because if we were ruling alone, we should have not even allowed this meeting to take place, we should have said. Rather you exist or you don't exist, so therefore you don't have to pass it. I think he doesn't feel well what have been tried to be dealt with earlier. Well, I think even Honorable Mudau, now he is no longer in the way he is earlier. We accept it. But then when the president now is winding the watch anti-clockwise, that is not correct. So, but I think if Mr. Van der Westhuizen doesn't want us to put words in his mouth, he must not do that to us. You better listen to our argument very, very, very carefully. And I think, Honorable Hanare, for us at a later stage in this debate, to talk about labor progress, it was the same Mr. Van der Westhuizen who spoke about labor progress. We were talking about temporary employment system. That's what we're talking about. He introduced that. Now, when we followed what he said, he changed, so he mustn't do that. I'm requesting that, that he mustn't do that. I'm humble. So, the issue here, I want to clear the words that we put in our mouth. One, we never spoke about that. We never spoke about that. We are talking to the suggestion that is put in this amendment 198A. Big capital letter A with small capital letters. That's what we're talking to. The period that is suggested here. Now, the debate is about whether there's a need of a period in relation to this amendment. What the debate is all about. Now, the premise that one is moving from Chevrolet is that Our argument does not suggest that there must be no temporary employment. After all, and we are not arguing that there must be no project work. That's not our argument. We are not arguing that there must be no temporary employment. The issue is the operation of the temporary employment. That's the issue. So, arguments must come as if we don't want even to hear or to see the existence of temporary employment. Not at all. Not at all. That's not our argument. Members must argue on the fact that we are putting on the floor. The issue is how the temporary employment services are supposed to operate. The issue is whether or not it is correct for one employee to have two employers. That is not a fact in the argument that has been advanced so far. Whether we say it is fine to be an employee and have two employers. And we have not suggested at any time to say, as a temporary employment, you have your office if you are not operating in the foot of your car. You have an office and you all go out because in order for you to have people in the data, you must look for those people. It's not necessary to say that they will only come to you. There's some kind of a way you have to advertise yourself that you can treat people if then you have them in the data. But the issue is not that you, a temporary employment services, is going to employ. That's not the issue. Because you can't employ a welder in company A, whereas in my office, there's no need of a welder. What I have in my office is in the data and for people who are qualified for that. For us, in an event where there's a client that is looking for welder, that guy obviously will pick up the phone. Well, then that guy must go all around at the house and do all sort of things. If it can do that, he must do it. If it was a shortcut just to get somebody with the qualities that it was a client, then it can approach the temporary employment service. And the temporary employment service now is going to get an income as a result of taking that service. But that person is not employed by the temporary employment service. What's going to happen is the client now will deposit the wages of this temporary employment service employee to the temporary employment service. And the temporary employment service in turn will pay the worker who is not working in the services of the temporary employment service, but working for the client. Who's pulling who? Who has created employment? The temporary employment service has not created employment. It has not. And we're not arguing that there must be no temporary employment that exists in the retrospect within the economy. That's not the argument. Not the argument at all. Thank you very much, sir.
I was ready. Whereby if you want to come in the point of order and you call accordingly when your time has come, not to disrupt and undermine. We have our own injustice and only on Friday when Dr. King cried. She was discriminated against when she was because I have a family come from it, but it is. That is why we spoke about the issue of the conciliation. The conciliation never centered around banks and mines. It was centered around all of us here banks. So that the depth of where we come from differs. So let us not allow a situation where our meeting is going to turn into that kind of the reason why the ANC tends to go to the negotiations as far back as 2020 plus years back was for us to find one another. So the reason why we are discussing this particular 1988A, all of us are sensitive about it. The pure exploitation of our own people, I have to say, this is what we should be discussing and debating and find a solution to the problem. It's not an ANC, a DA, or any other party problem. It's all of us. It's a South African problem that I come. So we have to address it as citizens, members of parliament. We can't begin now to point fingers at one another because we have to get out there. We respect one another, but I'm coming back to this one. The rules of the meeting are always applied. If need be, if a person has committed such, he should then apologize. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think to what I had, and then
Thank you.
I'm going to go to the next one. Somebody hold me. One of the quotes, well, I sent this one, but it's...